Welcome back to Money Life, where it's time for the big interview on today's show. I'm joined right now by Stan Major. He's portfolio manager at Hotchkiss & Wiley, Hotchkiss & Wiley Capital Management, which is online at hwcm.com. So the initials. And I will point out, although Stan has been on my show before, he was originally and initially an audience request. One of you guys saw or read something that he had done and said, hey, this guy. And I'm really glad he's back because, well, quite honestly, we're going to talk oil and energy and finance. Those are his particular areas. And I'll just point out, he was last on the show in November of 2021. And the timing for then and what he was saying, if you go back and listen to that interview, yet he was pretty spot on in terms of what he was saying was about to happen for oil and energy. Again, HWCM for more information on Stan and Hotchkiss & Wiley. Stan Major, thanks for coming back to Money Life.
Chuck, it's great to be here.
Money Life guests appear on the Gainbridge Hotline. Gainbridge helps you take control of your financial future. Self-manage your annuity investments from purchase to payout via Gainbridge's easy-to-use online portal at gainbridge.life. Gain access, gain control, Gainbridge. Stan, like I said, November 2021, you were on the show. We were talking oil and energy. Oil and energy were starting to rise, but they had been down so much that nobody could really say, oh, yeah, this is where we're going to see them. And now, like, the XLE was trading at $57 when you were on the show last time. It's now trading closer to $77. It's up by more than 33%. Again, it had been rising as we got into that. So where are we now? Because 10 of 11 market sectors, according to the S&P, were down in the first half of the year. The one that wasn't was energy. Does this continue?
Chuck, you know, I think it does. I mean, it not a day goes by where there isn't a lot of volatility in the energy market. Oil prices are up or down. News items will come across. I mean, whether it's are we going into a recession, China, strategic petroleum reserve releases, Russia, the economy in Europe, you name it. Every day there's something. And as I'm sure you're familiar with, when there's a lot of volatility, people look at the news and it's got to be attributed to something. And so there's just a lot of items out there. The way I've kind of described things in the energy market is let's take a step back and assume there were no issues in energy, meaning no issues in Russia, no issues with OPEC, no issues with Iran. The economy was decent. Let's, you know, just start there. What would the market look like? And what we did was we started in 2019, pre-COVID, and said, what would the market be like now if there were no lockdowns, et cetera? And we think that demand would have grown about, you know, 1% a year. So that would put demand at about 103 million barrels a day right now. Now, it isn't there for a variety of reasons, but we think that that's the potential and growing a little slowly on top of that. So, you know, with compounding, each year should be growing a little bit more. We think that, you know, when you read news articles about alternative energy, electric vehicles, et cetera, I think on the last time we met, we went through the math of that. It does have an impact, but it takes a very, very long time. And so we think that, look, we'll eventually get to that potential demand. We can't predict recessions, but what if we look at the history of recessions? They don't last very long, and then you get back to something what we would call normal. So we think of that 103, that's a pretty good starting place. And then we look at, okay, supply. What if things were going fairly well? And we kind of came up, penciled in a number that we think that we wouldn't be able to hit that demand number. It'd be something slightly lower. You know, 102.7 was the number that we came up with. It sounds more exact than it is. But when we look at that, we say, okay, structurally, if everything was right on supply and demand, we would be undersupplied. So what changes over time? Well, one of the things we mentioned is that demand should be growing slightly. But the real issue we think is on supply. It isn't producing 102.7. It's something significantly less than that. Why is that? There are a number of issues. OPEC has had trouble producing as much as they want. You know, they have quota increases and they've had difficulty meeting those. And then when you look, there are things like Russia. Russia's production has held up fairly well, but over time, oil and gas production are depleting businesses. If the Russians are not spending enough money, and you know, one of the reasons for that would be service companies leaving, eventually production will decline. The U.S. is growing a little bit, but it's not growing like you would expect if oil prices are high. And so we think the real issue, you know, as much as most of the news articles are about short-term factors, the long-run issue is something that I haven't seen, and I've been doing this for over 25 years, with commodity markets. When profitability is high, when prices for the commodity are high, you will almost always see supply come into the market. Producers will spend more money to meet that demand, and prices will come down. But what's interesting about this cycle, particularly in crude oil and natural gas, is producers are not spending the money. They're being what's called disciplined. So they're spending enough to keep their production flattish or slightly grow, but it does not appear that they're doing what they've done in past cycles, which is spend excess and really grow production and cause the market to be oversupplied. So what we think in the long run is you've got this structural issue with demand is potentially lower than it is. It should go up over time, and supply is just really not responding. In fact, you could argue that with the amount that the world is spending, its productive capacity could be declining. And that's a structural issue that is difficult to resolve. And the way it's resolved is high prices. So that's the way we see the oil market. We think they're going to be elevated for a while. But the interesting thing about investing is that, you know, if you look at the equities, the stocks that produce oil and gas, they don't reflect that. So we think that that's kind of the starting point of what's interesting in the energy market versus our last conversation.
Well, the other thing that's interesting to me is that there are a number of people, in fact, I suspect one of them will be on the show later today, who, in spite of the fact that energy has had this great run, still think that energy companies are pretty good value. So
yeah.
how much, it, and we weren't, in that discussion, you were talking about a lot of things. None of them were where we are relative on the value price and what's going on. So where are we? I mean, are you still feeling, are you feeling at all like after this run, there are still bargains to be had?
Sure. So let's put some numbers behind that. So for your listeners, you know, one of the things that I like to do often, people will talk about PE ratios and say, oh, the PE ratio is 20 or 30 or 10. And, you know, what do those really mean? What I like to do is actually take the inverse of that. So one over that number. And that's the earnings yield. So if you thought about a company trading at 20 times earnings, you're getting a 5% earnings yield. 100 times earning, you're only getting a 1% earnings yield. And a company with a PE of 10, you're getting a 10% earnings yield. The reason I like to talk in that jargon is it's easier to compare companies and bonds, et cetera. What type of yield am I getting? What type of interest rate on a bond or yield to maturity on a bond versus a stock? And so when I look at energy, and certainly different companies will have different PE ratios because some companies are growing faster than others. When I look at energy, you know, the stocks today are trading at 5 times free cash flow. And in the case of energy, their accounting can be a little difficult. So free cash flow is the equivalent of earnings. And so that means that they're, you know, at 5 times free cash flow, that's about a 20% earnings yield. And so what are those companies doing? Historically, they would have spent that money, borrowed more money, issued equity to drill wells and oversupply the market. Right now, they're saying, look, our stock prices are so low, the earnings yields are so high, we should buy back stock. Now, this is where it gets interesting. Hypothetically, if a company has a 20% free cash flow or earnings yield, and they take that free cash flow, you know, after they've spent the money to keep their production flat, if they buy back stock with that, theoretically, if the share price doesn't change, you would buy back every single share in 5 years. Now, obviously, that's somewhat impossible. But that's what companies are doing. They're taking the money, buying back stock or dividending it out to investors. Now, one of the questions that I get a lot is, well, oil prices are high. They were in the hundreds. Now they're in the high 80s. You know, what happens if oil prices were to fall? You know, if the market for some unforeseen reason becomes adequately supplied, if producers do produce more, you know, we think a normal price for oil in a market where supply and demand are satisfied is about $65. So what's interesting about the energy stocks is that if you thought about that scenario, you know, we do have a number of issues in the world. So oil prices are in the 80s right now. They were in the hundreds. But if, say, they did drop to 65, what would the value be? The earnings yield for the companies that we own would be about a 10% earnings yield. So you're getting something significantly better than what we think of in the overall stock market. So that is why we like the risk reward of the energy industry.
Let's turn this around, because the other space that you cover is the financial area. And the financial area draws a lot of different opinions. There are a lot of people who don't want to touch it right now. We, of course, are in a rising rate environment, in an inflationary environment, two things that don't necessarily always work out in sync for the financial world. So is this a transitional stage that we're going to get through, or is this a good stage to be in if you're an investor? Because when we come through and inflation normalizes, you will see higher rates, and higher rates are good for the institutions. What's your take on financials right now?
You know, I think the financials are interesting. Again, they're trading at relatively low multiples. It's not difficult to find banks at something around 10 times earnings. So again, like that 10% earnings yield. They are paying dividends and buying back stock, which is very good for investors. So when we look at that and compare the valuations in financials, they are a significant discount to the rest of the market. So say the market is probably just under 20 times earnings, which would be that call it 5% earnings yield. So we think the financials are attractive. And then one of the things that you mentioned is, in an environment with higher than zero interest rates, banks benefit. Their net interest margin expands. So that is good for them. And so, you know, we think that those are interesting stocks, with pretty good valuations and again, good balance sheets.
It sounds like the energy stocks, they can hold up, and they have plenty of room to run, even if we wind up seeing the current trend at the pump. You know, gas prices have been fallen for over 20 straight weeks at this point, to continue. For both industries, but maybe getting more back to energy, is there a spot where you hope inflation normalizes, or where the industry will act as if inflation is normal, even if it's not down to the levels the Fed is hoping will be normal?
To answer your question in a different fashion, I do think that the nice thing about the energy producers is they do provide a hedge to inflation. It's hard to figure out where inflation is going to be, how we'll end up. This is not a firm view, but a personal opinion. There's been a lot of money printed, and that tends to be inflationary. I would say personally, I'm a bit skeptical of the belief that it's transitory. You know, I think it could obviously cool down a bit if the economy's weaker, but that's very difficult to predict. So I think of energy stocks as being, you know, if you think about a world historically that we've been in since I mentioned the 25 years I've been here, in that environment, inflation has been very low. So interest rates have been falling. And so if you think about that, asset prices like equities and bonds, et cetera, were appreciating in price, and that gave you more purchasing power because inflation was relatively muted. If you went back to periods prior to that, you really had to invest to keep up with inflation. And so if you thought about, you know, a 3-5% inflation rate, you know, you really do have to beat that just to stay flat. And so inflation is uncertain, but I think having some protection against it is valuable, because there's certainly a case to be made today that it should continue. So what I like about the energy stocks is, if we're wrong and you know, the prices at the pump do fall to a much lower level, the equities in energy do not reflect that. And if we're correct, that we've got this very tight market, and prices should be well above what we think of as normal, even better. We'll own more and more of the companies as these companies are buying back stock.
Last question in the limited time we have left. How big is the Russia wild card versus, say, the political wild card? Like, what are you worried with the outlook that you've given in spite of the concerns that we've got, et cetera? What is the thing that you worry reigns the game, changes everything, you know, somehow throws a wrench in? Or is this certain enough that, hey, we've dealt with problems like this before, it can deal with them again?
Yeah, I would say how it all is resolved, I don't think anybody knows. But the risk is that you've got, you know, a country that produces over 11 million barrels a day, and they export something around 8 million. So it's a huge piece of the world oil and natural gas, also natural gas production. You cannot replace that overnight. It would take a very, very long time to do that. And with companies not spending for the long term, that is a very real risk. So I don't think any, you know, negative outcomes on supply where supply would be dramatically lower are priced into the current energy market. So I think that would provide a lot of upside if some of the scenarios that are certainly likely do come to fruition.
Stan, great stuff. I wish we had more time. We don't. We'll just have to make it down the line, see how everything plays out and how your forecasts change.
All right. Well, it's great to catch up, Chuck.
That's Stan Major, portfolio manager at Hotchkiss & Wiley, HWCM, Hotchkiss & Wiley.